Well, we just got a budget that changed some tax related things, but also, of course, for individuals filing, we're coming up to the end of the month. Also, if you're self-employed or in business, you've got June 15th, all of it's coming to roost. That's why I'm so pleased to welcome back to our show, Tim Cesnik. Tim is CEO of Our Family Office, but you see him writing in the Globe and Mail, so many other places. He's written, you know, some of the best books I've seen on tax, period, you know, Tim. So very pleased to have you back on the show. Appreciate it. It's a very busy time of year for you.
Oh, it's always great to join you, Mike. I'm glad to do this anytime.
Well, and I'm sort of thinking, and this is a little busier this week, given the timing of the budget. All right. Just a little anecdote. You must have been flooded with emails, et cetera, when you saw the change to the capital gains, for example. I mean, people are running around on that one.
Yeah, I was actually in the budget lockup, and at 4 o'clock when the embargo lifted and we were all free to go, my phone was immediately ringing off the hook, and I had 15 emails in the next hour just talking about the changes and the impact. And, you know, it's kind of a joke that the government thinks that the capital gains tax changes will affect 37,000 people or something crazy. Yeah. It's going to affect millions of people. So that's really disingenuous. But anyway, we're going to spend a lot of time planning for that in the next few weeks.
And just a quick, as you say, there's lots of talk to come on that. But I mean, I've got a friend who has a family cabin and up in a lovely part of British Columbia, waterfront, we call it the Sunshine Coast, Gibson's, you know, people have heard of that no matter where they are, you know, Seashelt. I'm trying to think of that. The Beachcombers was filmed in Gibson's. But so it's been in the family 50 years. And you can imagine the change in real estate prices there. So, I mean, it's affecting someone like him. You know,
absolutely.
And there's just so many more examples. And the assumption that that's not out there, you know, it just is mind blowing. As you said, it was an absurdity. There's a few absurdities. I won't put you on the spot with it. But guess what, Tim? I'm not betting we're building 3.87 million houses. I'll be dealing with that later in the show. But come on, I don't think I'm putting my money down on that bet. There's a few absurdities in that budget, as I talked about at the top of the show. But yeah, that's another one. It's going to affect a lot of people.
Absolutely. And, you know, the good news is there's an election and coming up in another year or so. So maybe we'll have a chance to, if we're not happy with how things are going, maybe make some changes. Yep. But you know, things have to change. The tax law is becoming unbearably more complex every year. We could go down and talk for that, but with that for hours, but you know, we won't.
Yeah. But you're true. I mean, I've said, and I'm not trying to convince anybody of anything. You have to see what's going on and make a choice. And, you know, this is a government that's chosen to be much more intrusive, much bigger, whether we're measuring in terms of the cost of government, whether we're measuring the record debt to pay for a lot of that expansion into other areas. You know, so there's a very clear choice. And this is just another aspect of it. But it'll be, I haven't really seen, and it may have come out, and I haven't just, there's been a lot on our plates, you know, analyzing this and talking about it. So I don't know what the conservative position is, but right now I think business people in general are seeing this as one of many, many regulatory approaches or tax approaches that discourage capital investment, simple as that. And we had the Ontario Medical Association came out and said it's going to make it tougher to attract individual doctors.
Absolutely. And that's because they brought in some expanded the exemption for small business corporations, you know, the capital gains, but they didn't allow it to apply to doctors or professional corporations. They can't take advantage of it. So the laws become a lot more complex when you start trying to sift certain people out of certain rules or include certain people in the rules and not others in the rules. Yeah. It gets to be unbearably complicated.
Yeah, and it's puzzling why. I mean, think about that. We have a housing shortage, for example. I mean, I don't think there's any debate on that. The government's acknowledged it themselves. You know, we need 3.87 million more houses. Why do you put anything in that could dissuade someone from investing in the housing market to increase supply? Or in the case that you've just alluded to, we know there's a family doctor shortage. You know, I mean, no one's debating that one. Well, why would you do anything that could be interpreted as negative in attracting medical professionals?
I know I don't want to take all our time talking about this, but it's interesting. My family owns a piece of property in Ontario that we've had rezoned because it can hold more homes on it than it does. 12 stacked townhouses, not a big property. And we were ready to go ahead and build this. The problem is now It's more cost effective for me from a tax point of view to just sell that piece of property right now than to build it out and sell units later and pay more capital gains tax after June 25th. So I'm not as motivated to actually go ahead and actually construct this now.
I can't tell you how often I've heard that already in just a few days, you know, that the budget's been out. Immediately I did, and I did put this on social media because it was 10 minutes later, I got two separate people emailing me saying, you know, I'm out of here. I mean, out of here in terms of the real estate. I already feel that way myself because it's too onerous when you do a municipal, provincial. This is federal, of course. That's really worrisome. That should be really sort of a flashing red warning light that that's been the response. Because again, I'll come back to the government, or I've seen some analysis by some economists who look at this as a one, like when I say one off, that's all they're examining. They don't know the other, the huge regulatory landscape we're dealing with, the huge taxation landscape we're dealing with, and an attitude that says it's not worth it. The hassle is not worth it. Now I can get 5% in a, you know, in a government bond. So I'm home free. You know what I mean? That's what I'm taking, you know, hassle free. I'll just take that. Oh, boy, that is not the reaction we need in housing and not the reaction we need in health, you know. So let me come to this year's taxes, and I'll come back to the budget in a second, but I want to come to this year's taxes. So we've got our deadline, as I said at the outset here. If you, you know, come on, you probably hate to think of how many people you've advised or how many tax forms you've looked at, you know, in a long career, but just give us a quick list of the warning from Tim Cesnik, who says, you know what, just double check you got this, or just make sure you got this.
Yeah, I think first of all, when it comes to filing your tax return, number one, make sure you do file it on time. Because if you don't file your return on time, especially if you owe money, okay, if you owe money and you don't file on time, you're going to pay a penalty. Even if you can't pay the taxes up today, file your return on time, because the penalty is going to be 5% automatically the next day after you filed your return late. And then there is an ongoing penalty for every month you're late filing that return of another 1% per month. So you don't want to file a return late. Now, as far as paying the taxes you might owe, the interest rate on overdue taxes now is now double digits. It's now 10%. So that's very, very high. It's the highest it's been in many years. So if you can't pay your taxes, you might actually consider borrowing money to pay your tax bill if you have to, because the interest rate might be lower than what the government's going to charge you.
I just want to revisit those numbers, because that is a change. As you said, so I did file, so I avoided that 5% automatic penalty, but now I don't have the money, and I'm not sending it in or whatever. Holy smokes. Over 10%, you know, what are they, the mafia? I mean, seriously, isn't that, when do usury rates sort of kick in on this stuff?
Slightly under credit card rates. It's crazy, yeah.
But your point's well taken. Maybe you have another way of borrowing that. So, I mean, 10%, if you're starting and looking at 10% or a percent a month, for goodness sakes, see if you can't get a rate that's better than that and pay it off. I mean, but as I say, that's mind blowing. You know, that should have been my shocking stat, Tim.
We never used to, I know, for the last number of years, we've never talked about the interest rate and overdue taxes because it hasn't been meaningful. Yeah. But today it is very meaningful. The other thing you want to do is, because interest rates have gone up so much and people who are incurring interest, you want to make sure, first of all, if you can, to deduct the cost of your interest, because that will reduce the overall cost. Now, not everyone can deduct their interest because maybe they didn't use the board money for business or just income producing purposes. There's a way to fix that in some cases. You could, for example, if you had access to some cash or some investments, you could take those investments or that cash, you could pay down your debt that's not deductible.
Right.
And then re-borrow to replace your investments or your cash in your bank. And all of a sudden, you can now deduct the interest cost because you're borrowing for the purpose of earning income. And so I would encourage people to think about restructuring their debt a little bit. We call it a debt swap to make your interest deductible. So make sure you're looking at all the interest you've paid and to ask the question, can I deduct my interest now? Very, very important. Higher income earners have to be concerned about something called the alternative minimum tax, which is, they've changed the rules around that. We won't get into the details of it, but if you're making over $173,000 a year, which puts you into the high income bracket, you have to be concerned about this new second tax that you might have to pay instead, which might be more than your regular tax. And just talk to a tax professional about planning for that if that's the case. I think also just you want to make sure more than ever you're not missing any deductions and credits that you are entitled to. So things like obviously medical expenses. There's always an expanding list of what will qualify for medical expenses. So make sure you've checked that out. Obviously, childcare expenses, self-employment losses are still very helpful. So if you started a business last year, or even if you didn't make any money in that business yet, you can still report the expenses. You can still, you know, claim your losses, and those losses can often be applied against other kinds of income you're earning, and that'll save you tax. So self-employment is still one of the greatest tax shelters available, because you can deduct the cost of anything that was incurred, any cost incurred for the purpose of earning income from the business.
Can we, and on that, let's say I've got a, just remind us about the home office kind of rules, because of course that became even more prominent during COVID and, you know, whatever you were considering. So now, so how do I handle that? Like, let's say I use a room and it's got to be dedicated. It's dedicated for, you know, my business. Do I just simply take the kind of estimate the percentage of square footage that is? Like, if I've got a 1,500 square foot home, I'm making it, you can tell my math because I'm making it very easy.
Sure, sure.
150 square foot office space in a separate part of the house. It could have been a bedroom, but instead I'm using an office. So now that's 10%. Do I now take 10% of my mortgage payments, utilities, any other costs associated with home? But that's how I determine how much to apportion to my home business.
Yes, that's right. Now, it depends on whether you're an employee or you're self-employed. Mm. So employees can claim a deduction for home office expenses if the employer requires you to work from home. If you're just voluntarily, if you're just saying, no, I just prefer to work from home, I'm just choosing to, then you can't actually claim any home office expenses. But if you're required to, and that requirement has to be for half the time or more. So if that's a category you fall into, then you can claim expenses. Self-employed people, it's a bit different because you're self-employed. If you need part of your home as a home office, you can claim home office expenses. And the list of things you can claim as a self-employed person is a little bit broader. You can claim mortgage interest and property taxes, whereas employees can claim everything else, not mortgage interest, not property taxes.
So big distinction, are you self-employed and your employer has to requested you say you can, I guess during COVID, everyone could claim that because you were supposed to stay home, but we're post-COVID right now. So the employer has to say work from home.
It doesn't have to be in writing. As long as your employer requires you, just says, hey, verbally, you've got to be at home. Then you can claim an deduction, but your employer does have to sign a form in case CRA comes asking for it. It's called T2200. So make sure you get that if you're an employee.
When you talk about expenses, is there something that you find people miss? You know, one of the things that I know that people maybe don't appreciate, you can pool your charitable expenses or pool your medical expenses, you know.
And you'll save a little bit more tax by doing that. You know, not going to make you rich, but if you claim all your donations on one spouse's return, if there are two of you, you'll save more tax, probably $50 more in tax than if you separate the expenses and claim them on two returns. So that's a mistake people make. People also make a mistake by claiming deductions in the wrong year. So for example, if you make an RSP contribution, or even now a contribution to the new first-time home buyer's savings account, you're entitled to a tax deduction for the money you put into those plans. But the question is, are you going to be making more money next year, like, or maybe 2024 or 2025 than you're making this year? Will you be in a higher tax bracket in this year or next year? The answer is yes. Then you should probably be saving that tax deduction for next year. Yeah. It'll save you more tax next year. So you can claim it this year, but it may say you save you less tax if in 2023 your income wasn't as high. So we see that often as a problem. And another problem, some people who are lower income might claim enough of a tax credit or deduction, whether it's tuition or whether it's RSP contributions, to bring their income below the point where they're paying any tax. Mm-hmm. Well, don't claim so much that you're not going to pay any tax on less than $15,000 of income anyway. So don't bring your income below that level by claiming a deduction. So if the deduction can be saved for next year.
And that just brings to me, let's say I don't think I owe any tax. You know, I am low. I made $14,000 or something. And I'm talking students are part of this, summer students, et cetera. What do you still file, I guess, is the bottom line. Do you still file and say, well, I don't owe anything, so I'm not filing? What's the advantage of actually filing?
Yeah, there's a big advantage to filing if you are 19 years of age or older, and if you had any earned income at all. So you earned any income doing anything. The reason you want to file is, number one, you may not pay any tax if your income is under $15,000 or so, but you'll accumulate RSP contribution room, mm-hmm. so that later you'll be able to put money into your RSP. That's good. And on top of that, if you are a low income earner, but you file a return and you're 19 or older, you can collect a GST credit, which is cash in your hands. They'll pay you, send you money every quarter. It's about $400 a year, but it's free and you might as well collect it. So yeah. File a return.
You know, just listening, and obviously you're encyclopedic on this, but it just tells me to the degree to which the tax rules have become so much more complicated, you know, and it makes sense as the government becomes, is an interventionist government. They're into more areas and it's expanding still. I mean, that's what we've heard in the budget. It just has become so complicated for individuals. You know, I mean, yes. I feel like we don't have a chance.
I mean, let me give you an example, really simple, of that. After the budget this week, there are now three capital gains inclusion rates that could apply to you. Mm. There's a 50% rate we've seen for the last 20 years. There is the new two-thirds rate, which they introduced in the budget. Or if you're subject to alternative minimum tax, which under the new rules, it could be 100% capital gains inclusion rate.
Yeah.
So, and it could be, you could pay more tax at more than one of those rates. So, I mean, it is unbearably complicated and the average person has really no chance to properly plan for or do their taxes properly anymore. It's if you have any kind of complexity at all, you're going to need a tax specialist. And the administrative cost of filing taxes has gone up exponentially because of all of this.
Another great point, because that won't be reflected in the StatsCan cost of living stuff, you know, in their inflationary numbers, you know, right. Another a major part. And it is, I think the fact that it's so confusing, it's the depth you need, it really discourages people. And I think it turns people off too, but I think it discourages people. And no sign that anyone wants to simplify that, because you know, you always think of what would get my vote, if you know what I mean. And people have a wide range of values or priorities, you know. And I've described this current situation as pretty broad. I think it's clear that the number one priority for the federal Liberal government is climate change. And I can give you 58 reasons why I think that, you know, and obviously they pay a lot of attention to LGBTQ issues on the other side. And now they're just jumping into housing. People forget that it was as late as August of this year, the prime minister said it wasn't a federal responsibility. Then then they saw the polls. All of a sudden it's, you know, an announcement, you know, every week, but you know, so it's, but anyways, they have other priorities, and it's not economic growth. It's not GDP per capita. It's not investment per capita. It's not actual cost of living, because they've contributed so much to that increase. So, you know, people have to make a choice on this. But as I say, I just sort of shake my head at how discouraging it is for people, how overwhelming it is. And right back to what we said at the outset, I know so many people. I'm in a unique position. I get a lot of communications thrown at me. The give up is maybe the most common thing. Well, I'm just not going to do any investing anymore. I'm not, you know, I'm pulling in my horns, you know, kind of thing.
Well, the other thing too, I'd mention, if you do file your return and CRA comes back and asks for more information, which they might do, they've made it very difficult to actually comply with in a reasonable manner with the tax. I'll give you an example. I recently got audited for my home office expenses, as many Canadians did. And so they sent me a long letter asking me for information about my home office expenses, and literally the number of receipts and statements that I had to send to CRA was about 1,000.
Oh my God.
About 1,000. When I added it all up, the pages were about 1,000. Now, I didn't send everything to them because I wasn't going to accumulate 1,000 pages of documentation, because it would have saved me about $300 in tax.
Yeah. I had a similar with our, sorry, I interrupted, but it just reminds me, somebody who works with us on Money Talks got audited for their travel, you know, mainly car travel, you know, they're self-employed, and the hassle, they wanted exactly the same. Well, I want, where did you pay? You know, I want the receipt for the gas, exactly what you were doing, you know, why it was an office expense. And I said the same thing. I said, you better make a quick guess at how much, you know, you didn't claim that much. It was like $2,000 at your rate. Right. It's not, you know, $500. Well, no.
For me, you know, here's the problem. People are just going to say, I'm just not going to claim the expense then. I'm not going to claim it because I can't comply with the administrative burden to provide you with information. there's a problem with our tax law when you're entitled to a deduction, but you just can't claim it because you can't comply administratively.
Yeah.
There's a real problem.
Huge. And look, it's obvious it's getting worse. That's the other thing. I mean, on the broad scale, it's just getting worse. And I just wonder,
An example of that is the underused housing tax return, which many people now have to file. And 99% of those returns result in no taxes owing at all.
Yeah.
But people have to file them by April 30th if they have a company that owns a piece of real estate or trust that owns a piece of real estate. It's just an information gathering process for the government. And it's overreaching, and it really is not providing any value to anybody.
Let me finish with one quick question. Is that okay? So let's, I'll make it an easy one for me. You know, you say, oh, I didn't include that charitable receipt, or maybe I didn't include any, and I'm always pushing for Special Olympics. So, I maybe have 10 of those, what do I do now?
If you've forgotten, first of all, if you've either forgotten a deduction or a credit that you should have claimed and you realize after the fact you forgot, you can actually file an adjustment to your return. You don't have to file an amended tax return. It's not that complicated. You get a form called T1ADJ, which stands for adjustment. And it's a one-page form. You fill it out. You say, here's what I originally put on my return. Here's the right number. They may ask you for evidence of a receipt or something to prove you had the expense. But as long as you provide that, you should probably just send it to them along with your form. Then they'll make an adjustment to your return. And also realize, too, if they do come back and ask you for something as simple as a donation receipt because you claimed something on your return, count yourself fortunate because that's not that complicated to provide that. It becomes a lot more challenging when you've claimed home office expenses and you've prorated it and they want you to send a diagram of your home with your, all of that stuff gets very, very time consuming. But make sure you do keep your receipts because they may actually reach out to you and say, can you send us that donation receipt? Send us that medical expense. Yeah. And then you can upload that to what's called My Account online, which you should, everyone should be subscribing to.
Yeah. Well, as I say, I know this is an incredibly busy time and I appreciate you taking your time and always, as you do, helping out the Money Talks audience here. Tim Cesnik is CEO of Our Family Office. Tim, wonderful as usual. Thank you.
Thanks, Mike.